This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Tyrannosaurus Rex is one of the most beloved dinosaurs in American popular culture, but the Tyrant King, as the name implies, has a kind of shady past. He's been holding on to some secrets. Nobody has been able to figure out just how T-Rex got so big and powerful. Well, a new discovery is helping paleontologists answer that question. Lindsay Zano led a team that uncovered pieces of one of T-Rex's predecessors, a discovery that narrows a 70-million-year gap in the fossil record. Lindsay Zano is head of paleontology at the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences and a professor of biological sciences at North Carolina State University and joins us now. Welcome back.
Nice to be here again.
Tell us more about this gap in the fossil record, how we know that what we didn't know, that something was missing in the record of the Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Yeah, well, tyrannosaurs sort of appear out of nowhere during the last 15 million years of the Cretaceous leading up to that great mass extinction event that happened at about 66 million years ago. And by the time they show up in the fossil record, they're already these large-bodied predators that are dominating the ecosystems of the day. But that's kind of the final chapter of their story. What we've been missing are the first chapters of how they got to be that way in the first place.
Now, how did you know? I mean, I guess at some point, you know, this is the first record you have of an animal. How did you intuit that there was something missing in the case of the T-Rex?
Well, we knew that they had to have been there, and we had had sort of tantalizing pieces. We'd found little isolated teeth of what we thought were tiny tyrannosaurs sort of scattered around this record during this 70 million years. It's really an astonishing gap. For which we sort of knew they should have been there, but we just hadn't found their skeleton. So we've been out hunting in that area looking for them, and we finally came across something that was diagnostic enough that we could figure out, hey, yeah, this really is a tiny tyrannosaur that was living in this time period.
So what did you find?
So we found actually just the hind limb of this animal back in 2012, and it was very small. This is a tyrannosaur that could have been able to, like, look you right in the eyes. You know, we're talking about about 5 to maybe 6 feet tall at the time. And that's really small when you think about how big Tyrannosaurus Rex is. That's a 43-foot-long animal.
Well, and so how did you determine that this bone was actually from? Because as you say, it's not like the Tyrannosaurus Rex that we know, and it's only the hind leg. So how did you know it was T-Rex?
Well, that's what's so great about this story for us is that we found this animal in 2012. We found just a few of its leg bones sticking out of the side of the hill, and sort of that process that the public doesn't get to see about how we got from that discovery moment to figuring out that we had a tiny tyrannosaur was really long. It was about, you know, 6 years. So it took about 2 years conservators at the museum to piece together all the tiny little pieces and reconstruct what this leg looked like. And then several years for me to go through the anatomy and try and figure out what in the heck we had actually found, because turning up a tiny tyrannosaur isn't something that you do every day.
And this is not Rex. He has a new name on account of the fact that he's not as big as his descendant. What did you call him?
That's right. We called him Moros Intrepidus, and Moros translates to harbinger of doom. And the reason we chose that name is because this animal, Moros, really signifies the origin of the Tyrannosaur lineage here in North America. And it was an intrepid event because what we found when we studied who the closest relatives of these early tyrannosaurs were, we found that those species were not living here in North America. They were actually living in Asia. And so it's clear to us that these Asian tyrannosaurs actually migrated into North America, became established here in North America, and then went on to evolve into animals like the great T-Rex.
What would the environment? Well, first of all, tell us where you found the bones that are now Moros Intrepidus.
The skeleton of Moros comes from what is now Utah.
What was it like then when old Moros was hanging around?
It was a dramatically different place at that time. So global temperatures were very high. Sea level was very high. And that area would have been lush. It would have been actually much like coastal North Carolina back about 95 million years ago.
And what about its habits? Were they similar, do you think? I mean, obviously a predator, was it? And a meat eater?
Yeah, a predator, a meat eater, but much smaller. Yeah. And it gave us some clues into what the ecology and biology of early tyrannosaurs were like, why they were so successful as a group. Moros was incredibly speedy. It had a very sophisticated sensory toolkit, so great eyesight and hearing and a large brain. And Even with all of those advanced capabilities, they still were still living in the shadows of other predators at the time. So at the same time that Moros was around, we had these giant colossal predators known as allosaurs. So you can see an example of that at the Museum of Natural Sciences downtown in the Glass Dome. So these tiny tyrannosaurs were really living in the shadows of animals like that when they first arrived here in North America. But because climate change was happening at the time, those giant top predators actually went extinct. And that freed up these tiny little tyrannosaurs to go on to assume those roles later on.
So in the meantime, they had speed at their advantage over the big guys. And then as the big guys died out owing to climate change in that case, well, now that's interesting. Why would they get bigger? Heck, you've been doing just fine like you are. It takes a lot less energy to be small. I wonder why they would evolve to be big just because the big predators left.
Well, you can imagine that if those big predators disappear, but you still have a lot of big prey around, that something is going to take advantage of that by evolving to giant size so that it can take advantage of those new prey items.
You talked about eyesight. You talked about, you know, wit and speed. How did you determine all that from the bones that you found?
Well, what we were able to do is place, even though this is a fragmentary specimen, we're able to place it pretty closely in its family tree, and we have good representations of skulls and other things from very close relatives, so we can translate those characters to this particular animal.
And was T-Rex pretty much the same way in terms of its speed? That was one of the advantages, even though it evolved to have size.
Yeah, so T-Rex wasn't that fast of an animal. It was basically a giant head on legs. It just needed to move that enormous bone-crunching bite around and sort of chomp down on things. But it did have spectacular binocular vision, so it had really good vision systems.
So what do you need to know next? Now, you've got, there's still, all right, that's 70 million years between Moros and T-Rex. You got a whole 70 million years to fill in here, right?
Yeah, we have plenty of new discoveries to make for all those aspiring young paleontologists out there. What we need to fill in that gap. So we know we have a 5-foot-tall tyrannosaur at about 95 million years, and we know we have a 2,000-pound animal just 15 million years later. So how quickly tyrannosaurs went from these tiny animals to taking over that giant predator niche is a gap we still need to fill in.
Yeah, and I suppose we want to know a little bit more about the migration, too, how long it took. And were they still in Asia when we would have found them here, or did they all sort of move out?
Yeah, no, they had their separate evolutionary lineage in Asia, that it was happening concurrent with what was going on here in North America. But I think it's fascinating that probably the most famous North American dinosaur of all time really is an immigrant story. It really owes its history to an immigration event with Asia.
And climate change. All of those things are important factors still, and we're still studying them, which is the importance of paleontology and all the good work you do. So how do you talk about your work? Because I know you're going back to that field. You go there pretty much every year in that area in Utah where you discovered Moros. How do you do your work? What are you looking for?
Well, you know, we have to get on the ground, eyes on the ground out there to find these fossils. There's really no way for us to do that except walking around, hiking around in these badlands, looking for places where the fossils are actually sticking out of the side of the hill. So we go out and we cover, tens of square miles out there looking for new skeletons that might be exposed on the surface.
It's kind of interesting because unlike other science where there may be a hypothesis, an idea that you have, so you go try to prove it, you're just looking for whatever bone shows up, eh?
I think there's a hypothesis behind where we go and why we go there and what we're looking for, but there's also an element of discovery. You know, we find all kinds of other cool things while we're looking to answer that one question that we never could have expected.
The discovery and then, of course, the analysis, the hard work of figuring out what it is I've got here and where it fits in the grand scheme.
Sure, and what it means for the evolution of life.
So it seems to me like we could do Back to the Future meets Jurassic Park now that we've got this gap. We could have T-Rex kind of going back or Moros looking forward to, you know, I guess it would be T-Rex saying, what am I going to become?
Yeah, we've kind of got two ends of the spectrum here. We need to sort of fill in the story in between.
And big questions that remain for you?
Oh, big questions that remain. Most of our big questions center on the impact of that climate change that you mentioned and what it did to dinosaur communities and how they were able to cope with that or not cope about with that and what that can teach us about what's happening in our own environments today and what kinds of animals are susceptible to that kind of ecosystem collapse.
And, of course, we've got the headliners like T-Rex, but what was interesting were the animals that we didn't know much about, little vole-like animals that might have been scurrying about at the same time, which would then, in the future take advantage of these niches that were created by whatever ecological disaster or change.
That's right. We don't just look at the dinosaurs out there. When we're out there, we're piecing together all the pieces of those puzzles, the plant life, the evolution of flowering plants during the time, and the mammals and the snakes and the lizards. We're looking at the whole picture to try and detangle that story.
Lindsay Zano is head of paleontology at the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences, a professor of biological sciences at North Carolina State. Thanks so much for being on the program.
Thank you, Frank.
You can find out more about her discoveries at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, the author of The Best of Enemies on having his book turned into a major motion picture. We'll talk about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned.